go surf. Surf, surf, breakfast with Bob. Ooh, yeah.
Pacho Man! Wow, we have a big audience today. Thanks everybody for coming. My name is Bob Babbitt. This is Breakfast with Bob, day two. We are brought to you by EAS Myoplex, Hoka One One, Polar Velo Fix, Normatec, Four Seasons Hualalai, where we'll have our championship edition on Sunday. Amyo Power Breather, our guest, a gentleman who last November went 7:44:29 at the time, the fastest Ironman of all time. Please welcome from Canada, Lionel Sanders.
Thanks for having me, Bob. We've been meeting each other quite a bit this year. Last time we were in Boston together.
We were traveling in Boston, and what was cool, let's talk about Boston. So you qualified for Boston here 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2015.
Uh-huh. Now, did you guys realize that you can qualify for the Boston Marathon during the Ironman?
It's the only Ironman, I believe, that allows that.
Uh-huh. 140 people qualified for Kona, for Boston at the Ironman, during the Ironman Marathon. That is pretty darn cool.
I certainly did not qualify this for next year's Boston with my last year's time, unfortunately. But oh well.
And the cool part is that Lionel was there with his mom, and his mom qualified for Boston. And the plan was, and I think it worked out well, is you would go off in your wave, run a hard 20.
Yeah, I went off in her wave, actually.
Oh, you did?
And then I did my 25K long run. And then I ate freezies and walked for the next 6 kilometers or so. It's amazing how many freezies you can accumulate over the course of 6 kilometers. And then we ran the final 12 kilometers together, and it was a great experience.
And your mom was a multiple pack day, a smoker?
She was a smoker for a long time, and I think had like the beginning stages of COPD, and then said, you know, I need to make a change in my life, and got into running, and then qualified for Boston.
And now ran 3:35?
That one, yeah, it was a hot one. If anyone was there, it was a tough day, actually. But she wanted to run a little quicker. Her best is there, actually, 3:30. But, it was a good run nonetheless, and now she's trying to qualify for this race.
I love that. So this year, one of the better races, the Challenge Championship, you and Sebi had one of those classic races where you guys were, you know, Alistair Brownlee's off the front. It was the half distance. And you guys pretty much rode together and ran together.
Yeah, we swam together too, which is interesting for me.
It?
That's actually why I'm here, because I had originally said I'm not going to do an Ironman, well, until I get my swim back, well, together, decently well. And my goal was to swim in that second pack with guys like Sebastian Kienle and guys who proved that they can bridge the gap to the front of the race. And that was the first time where I actually swam side by side. I saw him. He had number two, the cap number two, and I saw it the whole race. So that sort of gave me the motivation to come to this race and see, can you do it again here?
Now, that race also has a 20-meter draft rule, so that it's really a pure time trial. And Alistair Brownlee was off the bike in front of you guys, but the two of you running together.
Yeah, we rode basically the entire ride together, and I think we came off the bike about 45 seconds down in second and third place. And then we put together a good run, and we ran side by side for 15 kilometers. And I died 1,000 deaths in that run. He had defeated me multiple times, and gap opened up. And
so he was surging.
Yeah, I think he was surging. I don't know, or I was faltering. I don't know, one of the two, but he was definitely doing something. And whenever the gap would open up, I would start to go back inside myself and say, you know, what are you doing? It's not, you know, I mean, you can still win this thing. And then at about 12 kilometers, he let out a few moans, and he had been like completely showed no signs of weakness whatsoever up until that point, and that's when the tables turned, and that's when my strength started to build, and then eventually a gap opened up for me, and I knew it was now or never, and put the pedal to the metal and didn't never look back.
And then there's a point when you're heading towards the finish, there's a turn and you pass each other. And
yeah, it was at about 20 kilometers, and I think I had maybe a 400 meter lead or so then, but I mean, 400 meters feels like it's like 2 feet, feels like he's like 2 feet behind you when you're in that, because you're basically no more glycogen left going to the brain. And anyways, he put his hand over the fence, and I mean, to me, that just meant I'm not pressing, enjoy that finish line, great race. And I mean, he's taught me many lessons over the years, but that was just another great lesson in sportsmanship. And so I was able to enjoy it. It was a really great finish line. I was able to enjoy it in its entirety and get the tear in the eye and the shiver down the spine. And I think even he got a tear in the eye, actually, when I watched the coverage afterwards, because it really was such a powerful, great race.
So here, you swam the practice swim on Saturday. I said 53. It was actually 52.37.
Indeed, indeed.
And that basically you could go home right now and be happy.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the goal for the entire year. That's what I set out after this. You know, it was a very humbling experience here last year. And I had to go redeem myself a little bit, and that was the performance in Arizona. But after Arizona, I said, I mean, it's just too much extra training in the bike and the run. I have no time to devote to improving my swimming. So I said, no more Ironmans. And
so you were just going to focus 70.3.
That's right, and it allowed me to free up a lot of time to devote to my swimming, and it really did, at least mentally, it freed up a lot of energy, and so I devoted for 6 months, and then I had that swim. Well, one of the things that I did is I started swimming with a youth swim club.
Yes.
And they beat the crap out of me.
And they made fun of me.
They
like
took
6 years old.
No sympathy whatsoever. They had no problem. I literally lined up one time in a 50 free. I think I was probably 20 years older than the youngest guy. They were like 6 and 7 years old. There was actually a media guy there, like a local thing, because he thought it was kind of funny that I was doing this, and he interviewed some of the kids, and I'm like three times the size of these kids, and he's like, you guys are gonna take it easy on them, right? And yeah, the kids are like nervous on the camera and everything, and then literally I finished second last place in the 53 against these kids. So I mean, but that's swimming. Like, if you could swim with those guys, you know, maybe become an old front pack. But
you have to be willing to be humble, though, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the reality is, the guys who are coming out front pack here, they did all those things when they were 6 and 7 years old. And,
you didn't do that.
And well, six all the way. Like, if you're Andy Potts, still at the time you're 22 or 23 years old, swimming hardcore all the time. And I just didn't pay those dues. So now I'm actually starting to pay those dues. And then also, I think, you know, just over the past 7 years, I've gotten a much better sense of how to prepare for the bike and the run, so that I'm not nearly as overtrained, so that I'm going to the swimming pool with a lot more freshness, a lot, you know, I have that more neurological perception and ability to ingrain good muscle firing patterns. And then the other piece of the puzzle is I bought an endless pool with mirrors on the bottom. And so now I really have no excuse whatsoever. I look at this appalling swim stroke every single day, and it's motivation to improve. So, I mean, I haven't really got to use the endless pool too much. I've only had it for 2 months, but I'm really excited. After this swim, it proved that, I mean, obviously,
you're doing the right stuff.
Like, last year I was 8 minutes and 47 seconds down to Harry Wiltshire, who led out of the water. And it's not apples to apples, because it wasn't the race that'll occur on Saturday, but I was under 4 minutes down to him in that practice swim. So it's safe to say I think I've improved anyway since last year. So I'm motivated just to go home and start, get back into that pool and start continuing to hone the stroke.
So 2 years ago when you came here, you had done, I think, at least 15 days of equivalent of what, 80 to 100 mile rides, followed by, you know, half marathon runs,
yeah,
brick type of workouts.
Yeah, it was terrible training. I mean, I basically was insecure about being able to cover the distance. And so I said, how can I become better at covering the distance? Well, I'll swim the entire distance in the morning, then I'll ride the distance at race pace in the afternoon.
Miles.
I'll ride four plus hours at, I mean, my worst one of, I did it 10 times leading into the race, and in about 15 weeks leading into the race, I pushed 300 watts minimum for 4 hours. One time I pushed 330 watts for 4 hours, which is a lifetime best, actually, 4 hour power. And to put that in perspective, in St. George this year, I pushed 333 watts and rode 201 for 90K.
Right.
So I did that for 4 hours in practice, and then ran a sub 120 half marathon off it. 10 of those in 15 weeks. By the time I got here, well, this was actually my worst performance of the 15 times, which is, I mean, makes logical sense why that would be. But, I mean, that's not how you should go about it.
No. And then this last year...
Well, last year I was completely in fear of what I did the year previous, so I took the complete opposite approach, and I said, well, I'm just going to focus on 70.3 wells. I'm literally going to pretend that Kona doesn't even exist. And that's what I did. And my longest day leading, I did 1 4-hour ride about 2 weeks just out of insecurity. But my longest day in 6 months leading into this race was a 70.3. So that's all fine and dandy until you get out there 6 hours in and you realize your longest day has been 4 hours and 20 minutes. My body made it to 6 hours, which is quite impressive. It's another hour and 40 minutes later, but unfortunately the course record here is 8:03. So, I mean, I would say that's probably the most humbling experience, the most trying experience. I mean, I had the fastest run split at 70.3 worlds a month prior, and then I get up to the top of Polani, and I had nothing. Like, I had to walk. There was nothing more I could do. My legs just shut down. And so I walk-jogged for another, well, approximately 13 miles. And that was a very humbling experience. And every single aid station as you come up to it is, oh, God, I could just call and get a ride back now if you just drop out, just drop out, just drop out 13 times in a row. But, I mean, I think that would be disrespectful to the race.
It would be.
So I had to finish it, and I'm glad I did because, I mean, that's very, very powerful experience.
30th, something like
indeed,
that.
Indeed, yeah, something like that.
So Sebastian, I don't know where it was you saw him, where he's like, listen, I've been looking at what you did 2 years ago when you did way too much, and looking what you did last year where you did way too little. And maybe you should try to do something in the middle?
Yeah, we were in the car at after the Island House, actually, and he's like, go back and read your blogs from 2015 after Kona, then read your blogs after 2016 after Kona, take the middle, and that's how you should that's how you prepare properly for an Ironman. So, I mean, it takes years. I mean, it's the beauty of this sport is it takes, I don't know if you could ever learn. You probably run out of good years before you learn all the lessons there are to learn, so. It's one of the fun pieces of the puzzle.
So with Sebastian, you guys have developed this mutual respect. There's a chance that you guys could be coming out of the water together. And like you've said, you've never really been part of this race. You're always coming from behind. To be with Sebi coming out of the water, there could be some fireworks.
Yeah, I'll probably just go home then. I mean, that'll be a great year for me. I mean, that's the goal. That's what I came here to do. That is literally what I said is the goal for the year, is if you come out with Sebastian, you have achieved the goal. So
right.
Everything else will be icing on the cake. So that's certainly what I came here to do. Now, if that occurred, yeah, I mean, all bets are off at that point. He's proven that he can bridge the gap. He's bridged the gap every single year that he's come here.
Yes.
And so, I mean, from my perspective, I would certainly be watching to see what he does because he's proven that he can win and he's proven that he can bridge the gap. So all eyes will be on Sebastian if I happen to be anywhere near him.
He was saying that, I said, so if Lionel comes out of the water around you, you guys can ride together. He says, yeah, but I've ridden with Lionel. Lionel rides very, very hard. I'd rather have him 3 or 4 minutes behind me in this swim, so I don't have to deal with that guy.
Yeah, I know. I have a feeling he rides from the footage I've watched. I have a feeling he rides that way in this race in particular. So it'd actually be kind of interesting to see and experience. So
last year, after that 70.3 race, which was the entire focus, you go to the Gold Coast. Like you said, you had the fastest run split of the day. You were, I think Sebi was 2 minutes behind on the water. You were 3 minutes behind. And it was just the group up front, because of the way the course was set up and because of 10 meters, it was very difficult to bridge. Right, because basically,
yeah. Well, once Sebastian bridged, that was the end of it. Because I'm not going to outride Sebastian. So what happens in championship racing is once one of the best bikers bridges the gap, the whole pace of the pack accelerates.
Ah.
And thus, if you don't, you need to be there first. So there's a strategy there that, I mean, I certainly know this now and would never certainly allow to happen if I could. And so you have to race much differently in a championship style race, and you'll see Sebastian races that way in championship races. He is the first guy to hit the front, the first Uber biker or whatever you want to say to hit the front of the race, and the moment that happens, the whole pack will accelerate, and if you're not there, good luck in bridging the gap.
So when you look back at, you know, high school runner, then went down the wrong path, and you know, it was really finding Ironman Louisville at a point where you were probably at the lowest point in your life. I remember you telling me once that you couldn't even look yourself in the mirror when you were shaving because you didn't like what was looking back at you. What has this sport meant to you?
Ironman has saved my life. It really did. It popped into my head. I mean, it made me a believer in a higher power because I was like calling out to the universe for something. Give me something. I don't know where I am, what I'm doing. And the idea to do an Ironman popped into my head. And then I Googled it.
Out of nowhere. You didn't even know what it was.
No. And I didn't really know what triathlon was. And and it seemed very extreme. It seemed like something I couldn't imagine doing in the place that I was. and it seemed like the perfect thing to sign up for because of that fact that, you know, in the initial stages, it was a reason not to party and that sort of thing, but it also gave me something to devote myself to. And to you know, I had to work to earn a bike, to earn the money to buy a bike and a gym membership and all these things. And then the training and all that was just the icing on the cake, you know, made me feel better about myself and literally changed my entire body. I put on weight and muscle and got a new social network. And I mean, it just
changed
completely.
Everything.
Yeah, it saved my life because if I didn't find it, I was heading down a path really quickly that, you know, the end result is not good.
Hallucinations, all that type of stuff?
Well, I was experiencing all that stuff. But I mean, when you're getting into that, really, there's only a few end points, and it's jail and death. And I mean, those are unfortunately...
Or Iron Man.
If you're fortunate enough, indeed. If you're fortunate to come across something, yeah.
So mom and dad, basically, you want to go do... You Googled this thing called triathlon and Iron Man Louisville, and... But you couldn't afford to get there. You couldn't afford to pay the entry fee. Mom and dad believed in you enough to not only pay to get there, but they came with.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have any. I had just enough money I saved up to buy that time trial bike. And I think I was short on my rent a couple months even then. But I didn't have any money. So I didn't have a car. How am I going to get from Windsor to Louisville? You know what I mean? I didn't think about these things. They gave me a ride and bought a hotel and bought food. Like, these are logical things that most people would think about when they sign up for a race
kit.
A race kit, all these things that, you know, I was just a kid. I wasn't thinking much. I was just living in the moment. So fortunately, I had good parents who helped me out.
And then when you did that race, I think it was Paul Ambrose?
Indeed, yes.
Paul Ambrose lapped you.
Actually, what's interesting, too, is Louisville, I believe, is the same weekend as Kona this year. They have a pro race again.
Yes.
And he's returning to that race. And the little piece was like, damn, I wish I was going back to that race this year because I certainly would love to go back there and duke with Paul Ambrose in that race, actually, because, I mean, he lapped me. I was literally 13 miles behind and, you know, near death at that point. And
your first ever Ironman.
Yeah, and he was moving so fast. It was just this unbelievable machine of a man. And, you know, that's obviously, I think, where the seed was planted to want to see where I could take my body to and if I could be something like that. And anyways, he's going back to that race this year.
So
it'll be interesting to watch how that goes.
This last March, you came to Ironman 70.3 Oceanside, one of your favorite events. You've won that last couple of years. And one of the main reasons was Jan Frodeno, right? You wanted that battle. You like the battle against the best guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, my best experience, I would say, in my entire career was Oceanside 2015, where I came out of the water with a 4.5-minute deficit, and then I bridged the gap by about, I don't know, maybe 45 miles on the bike. And then we ran side by side for 5K, and he probably just toying with me, but then he dropped me like a bad habit, and then that was the end of that for me. But, I mean, we were hitting elbows, and I felt like I was, that was where I started to believe that I could duke with the best guys, you know, with a lot more training, a lot better attention to detail and those sorts of things. And till this day, I mean, that still is the most powerful experience I have had in my career. So I went again and he was on the list. And actually, I had improved my swim significantly. I was only 2.5 minutes down this time around. And I think I bridged a gap by about, I don't know, 15 miles, 16 miles. And just as I was coming up, he pulled off to the side with the flat tire. And it was, I mean... I still think the tire companies have bought up all the patents on like tires that don't have air or something, because I still don't understand why we're getting flat tires in professional racing. But anyways, and that was the end of it. So it was kind of an odd experience because I had, you know,
so
I knew
the air goes out of the balloon because you wanted that race.
Yeah, my whole race plan was around duking toe to toe for 20Ks and seeing if I could out sprint them or something. And then, you know, to go down that way was kind of an odd, deflating experience, but. Oh, well, you know, get on with it and continue on with the race. But
so indoor training, you've been hit by cars a number of times. You're up in Quebec. Yes.
I'm in Windsor, Ontario.
Okay, Ontario.
Uh-huh. These are false front teeth, actually, from getting hit by a car and smoking my face against the curb.
Oh,
actually, a snowplow. Got hit by a snowplow.
Hit by a snowplow.
Yeah, which
that doesn't happen here very often.
Why anyone is riding their bicycle when the snowplows are out, I have no idea. But
yeah,
I never claim to be bright.
So, but that led to indoor training.
Yes.
Tell us what the room is that you train in.
Yeah, I've now I'm moving up in the world. So now my training room is like maybe 200 square feet, whereas it was I think like 80 square feet. So, but yeah, I got the Woodway, the beautiful Woodway treadmill.
Those are nice.
And because I still have the old treadmill that I literally have rebuilt every single piece of the treadmill. I don't know why they sell 7-year warranties, because I have gotten my money's worth out of that 7-year warranty, because literally every single piece of the treadmill has been replaced. But anyways, I kept that treadmill and I built a room called the Energy Lab. And it is now, it on the other hand is about 40 square feet. And it is, I insulated the interior walls. Well, I shouldn't say I. My father-in-law insulated it, sitting back there, yeah. Insulated the interior walls. And it has that and a sauna in it. And that's literally, there's just enough room to open the door. And you go in there for like literally 5 minutes, even without a heater, and it's 80 degrees. You go in there with the heater on, it's 100 degrees. 100% humidity, the walls will sweat. Anyways, that's my heat room. And then I've got the rollers and I use the Zwift. And then in the other room, I've got the endless pool now. So it's a dream setup for me.
Oh my God, so most of your training, training's indoors.
I mean, I ride my bike on the rollers out on the back porch sometimes when it's nice out. I did do a bit more running this year, because one of the lessons actually I learned in this race 2 years ago was the pounding of the pavement.
Yes.
And the turn, like little even just little minor turning around and that sort of thing from doing so much running on the treadmill. I do believe it's great running, but you do need to strengthen those little accessory muscles, and you need to, I think, like strengthen, I don't know, the little micro tears and things that happen due to the pounding of the pavement. And that provides a lot of fatigue that if you're not prepared for, I mean, now be under this heat and the competition and the bike and everything, I mean, it kills you, literally kills you. So I probably do about 50% of my running outside and 50% indoors. But once it gets cold out, I'll be back to 100% indoor running and 100% indoor biking and 100% indoor swimming.
I know you haven't come close to the race you want here yet. On Saturday, and your training has gone well, you've had a great season. What are the goals for Saturday?
To swim next to Sebastian Kienle.
That's
it. And then the rest of it is...
takes care of itself.
Yeah, whatever.
I love that.
I just want to swim, man. I'm enjoying the journey, and swimming has been the Achilles heel, and now I've truly devoted myself to improving the swim, and I've already improved it. So the rest, I'm just here for fun, quite frankly. My perspective has been so much different than any other year. I'm having a great time, and it don't even matter, whatever.
I love it.
I'm going to race hard, though. Don't get me wrong. I'm going to race real, real hard. But.
Well, we've never seen you do anything but.
Yeah.
How about a round of applause for Mr. Lionel Sanders? Best of luck on Saturday,
Thank
my
you,
man.
Bob. Thanks for having me.
Poncho Man, take us out. And everybody will serve. And breakfast with
Bob. Maybe you need one surfboard, brother.
Indeed.
Yeah. Indeed.